Have you ever had one of those days when you don't want to wake up, everything is fucked, and everybody sucks? You don't really know why, but you want to justify listening to Raffle the Podcast, a show that aims to explore the relationship that individuals have with the internet and its impact on their lives. I'm Cotton Squab, joined as always by my co-host, Poochie.
Hello.
And this week we are joined by a special guest, Coda, also known as Radvac, also known as Gnome Boy, also known as... What else are you known as?
I think that's it. I think that's everything.
Yeah, well, so, pleasure to have you on the show this evening.
Glad to be here.
Is there any sort of thing you're working on right now that you want to tell the audience about? Any projects?
Just, like, screen printing stuff, I guess, is more... just like a fun, like, passion project that I do. But a lot of the stuff that I make is really inspired by my, like, childhood on the internet. So that sounds interesting. You can check it out at Backrooms on Instagram. R-U-M-E-S and not rooms like your bedroom.
We will have a link to that in the show notes. Yeah, you got great stuff going on over there. It is a perfect jumping off point for you to say that that is inspired by some of the early stuff on the internet. I think maybe we should jump out in front of this early on. We're related.
Yeah. That's going to play a big part in a lot of the stuff I want to talk about, actually. So.
Right, yeah. So our internet history is going to overlap a lot. Yeah. So before we get into it, Poochie, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, I am dandy. I am glad it is the weekend while we are recording this. Can't complain right now.
Fair enough. You could probably complain.
Okay, I could complain a lot if I'm honest with you guys, but I'm not at work anymore, so life is good.
That's the American dream. Piss away 5/7 of your week praying for the last two.
And I give it directly to my landlord.
Yippee. Yeah, it's been a nice couple of days. I purchased some technology, a new laptop, and on one hand, yay, new laptop. On the other hand, paying for it. So, with that, Coda, what would you say is probably the first places, types of things you remember doing on the internet? Did you have an email account as a kid?
Yeah, so when I was in the fifth grade, I was like 10 years old, so it's probably around 2007. I needed my first email to like make an account on Webkinz, and my mom made me an AOL account, and that's literally still the same email I use for everything.
Like that's your main email still?
Yep. Yeah. Every time I tell people I have an AOL email, they laugh at me.
Well,
yeah.
you're in good company because with the show we use an AOL email account. My original AOL email account still exists, but I think like the only thing that ever gets sent there regularly is I subscribe to Dilbert the comic.
Oh no! It makes that's like insane, right?
He's completely bonkers.
Well, this was pre.
Before we knew he was insane, yeah, but he is so far off the rails. Everybody's now.
Brains turned into mush,
and it wasn't. Even at that point, funny.
Was Dilbert ever funny?
I don't know. You'd think I would be the one to ask since I'm fucking subscribed to it, but
I mean, I guess young you was like, yeah, Dilbert.
I think that I thought smart people thought Dilbert was funny and that it would make me appear smart to like Dilbert.
You need a high IQ to understand.
What's the other one? Kind of like that, XKCD.
Well, XKCD is like actually for smart people, though.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I think the creators are like engineers, and Dilbert is that guy is. What does he do other than like?
I think he just worked in an office with a computer in the 90s.
And then like got lucky, and so this is probably not going to end up in the thing, but like. The podcast Behind the Bastards did a really good episode on Dilbert, the Dilbert guy, or I think it was a series of episodes, and man, yeah, he's not okay.
What? I don't even know the mangaka's name for Dilbert.
You call him a mangaka?
He writes the comic, doesn't he?
Okay. All right. That's enough.
His name's Scott Adams.
Yeah, yeah, Adams is the it's so forgettable. I was never going to remember that.
Scott Adams is the mangaka for Dilbert.
You've got to stop that.
So one of the first results is, what's the deal with Scott Adams?
Seinfeld.
Adams published a video in which he referred to black people as a hate group and advised white people to, quote unquote, get the hell away from black people. Adams later said this was a use of hyperbole.
To what extent? How much of it is hyperbole?
Literally none, right?
Jesus Christ. Your Honor, it was strictly hyperbole, not hate speech. It was a metaphor, you see. I was simply using black people as a metaphor for bad people.
Well, it's like that John Lennon song, women are the N-word of the world, but he like says it hard R and everything. And it's like, I mean, if that's the point that I think that he thinks he's making is that women are mistreated, but then it's, you are basically making the conceit that black people are mistreated and that that's okay as like a standard by which you can measure other people's oppression.
Yeah. Yeah, and Yoko Ono stands 10 toes down on that, too. I've seen her defending that to the end of the earth.
Well,
York said something similar, right?
Who? Oh, I don't fucking know.
Bjork.
Yeah, I think so, but I'm no Bjork connoisseur.
That's the sound a Swedish dog makes. Bjork. So, Webkinz, you mentioned, mentioned Webkinz.
Yeah, so that was the email I had to make, and then I used that to make a million accounts on a million different websites. Like, having an email as, like, a 10-year-old in 2007 felt like you had, like, the keys to the world.
That's true. That's completely true. It's like Home Alone 2, you know, Macaulay Culkin is living large in New York with, like, a credit card. That's the equivalent of being 10 years old in the 2000s with an email.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, just kind of like, I think prior to that, you had to use your, like, parents, like, stuff, and they never wanted to, like, give you their email for some reason.
Oh, God, no.
So it was nice. It was really nice. I mean, I used that literally to make, like, Club Penguin account. I used it to make RuneScape account. I used it for fucking everything.
I think, yeah, that's true for me also. And I have a Yahoo account that's still technically active, that the AOL, my AOL and my Yahoo account are the same email name, except the extension is different. But these, at this point, I only use those as password recovery for Facebook for when I have to deactivate my account again, because it keeps getting reactivated somehow.
Yeah.
So you said Webkinz, Club Penguin, and RuneScape. So it sounds like a lot of your early internet stuff was more or less games, strictly speaking. Yeah,
games were huge, I guess, back in the day, because there was no social media at the time for, like, you to interact with your friends online, like, outside of school or whatever. So, you know, getting on RuneScape or Club Penguin and, like, talking to your friends is pretty crazy. I remember the year after, like, my sixth grade year, one of my friends made me a Gmail account, because that was kind of like the first place I remember, like, kids my age were, like, congregating and talking in, like, chat rooms and stuff, but didn't, like, have a game attached
on Gmail.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, like, they used to have, like, I would have, like, a million chats open at the bottom, like, random people from my school.
Is that the same? That's like pre Google Plus, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was still called Gmail at the time, but this was like 2008, 2009.
To be honest with you, I completely do not remember that.
Really?
Neither do I. I think that's like,
I think it was a very niche.
Yeah.
Like, year of time for, like, my specific age group.
I guess it was probably like their response to stuff like AIM and MSN. Yeah,
it definitely was. I didn't use any of that stuff, so I think that's probably why you guys don't remember it, because you were on the earlier stuff a little bit.
Probably.
Just by a hair, like, literally.
Do you remember when YouTube had user profiles you could, like, edit? Like, you could put, like, a background on your YouTube profile, and there's, like, an about me and stuff, and, like, YouTube was trying to do, like, a more, yeah, like, MySpace really sort of thing?
I do kind of remember that, because I briefly had a short-lived web show, and I do kind of remember that, but I didn't use it much.
Yeah, that went kind of hand in hand with like the social aspect of my middle school. Like people would talk on like YouTube and stuff.
That's wild to think about. And now it's just tries to clone TikTok.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that, right. Like, YouTube back then versus now is insane. The first YouTube video I ever saw, I guess, kind of goes hand in hand with me being in fifth grade. Fifth grade was like my like inception into the internet. I think it existed. I mean, it obviously existed before I got on it, but it didn't seem like a thing to me until I was like 10 years old. And I saw the video, Hey Ya, Charlie Brown. And that was like crazy to me. I remember I went to school the next day and I was telling all these kids about like this crazy video I had just seen on the internet. It was very hard to get my point across. It was hard to describe back then. Like, there's this funny video my mom showed me, and like, and all the kids in my class were like, what the hell are you talking about?
I desperately wish that I could have been a fly on the wall for that conversation, because that sounds so fucking funny. But you're right. Trying to explain internet stuff to somebody that was not on the internet at that point in time was like an impossible task.
Yeah, I think that was that coming off of dial-up? Because I remember, like, I have experiences on dial-up, but that was before, like, YouTube was a thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and I, yeah, so dial-up and the YouTube era would have crossed over briefly, because if I remember correctly, the first year of YouTube would have been, like, 2006, I think. Yeah. And I want to say the very first video ever uploaded was maybe a kid playing Canon in D on the guitar. I may not be that's at least amongst the first videos that was uploaded. I just went to YouTube and I found your Charlie Brown video, and it was it's from 18 years ago. So this must be the same one you watched.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is.
And it's somehow only got 3 million views in 18 years.
Yeah, this was just like, I don't know, like you guys were talking in the last episode, well, I guess it'll be 2 episodes ago by the time this comes up, about, I think it was in line with viral videos.
We talked a little bit about...
My brain just failed me totally.
Well, we talked like animated viral stuff like Weeble and...
Yeah.
Like, that kind of stuff. Poochie, do you want to talk about fact-checking what the first YouTube video would have actually been?
Yeah, so I was curious, so I did a quick search, and the first video is Me at the Zoo by user Jawed, J-A-W-E-D, Jawed.
So, yeah, so this was April 23rd, 2005. Okay, yeah. So I guess I had the year off by a little bit.
Videos really started, like, taking off pretty heavily, like, animated videos in, like 2008 or something?
Yeah, the, like, mid to late aughts, I feel like, was when you got all the, like, Salad Fingers type stuff. And like...
Remember Ultimate Showdown?
Totally.
Yeah, that video blew my mind when it came out.
I still know every single word.
I think you showed that to me when I was like 12 or something.
I permanently changed the course of your life with Gandalf the Grey and Gandalf the White and Monty Python.
Yeah, I mean, just like funny junk and Newgrounds in general, I think, like, permanently, like, zapped my sense of humor from like that point forward.
It's weird because it's a mix between modern / postmodern non sequitur kind of stuff and the trend of like early 40s, 50s, 60s, like Bugs Bunny, Looney Tunes, that they had like recurring characters that looked a certain way and did a silly voice. And when we were kids, we were just like, oh, that's, you know, the funny Looney Tunes guy, you know, that's that guy that Yakko, Wakko, and Dot interact with or whatever. And then come to find out, it's like, no, that was like a real early TV and movie celebrity that the old men that made these cartoons just knew. And so it was a pop culture reference, but nobody fucking understood it in like 40 plus years later syndication as kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Especially, I can't think of any of those videos off the top of my head, but I remember we used to spend so much time watching that kind of stuff.
I remember Q-Boy. I remember that was a series we watched almost the entire thing of in like a day.
It crossed over too into like Flash games at the time, because do you remember, oh, what was it called? Link in the like Lampshade of Doom or something?
Yes, Legend of Zelda and the Lampshade of No Real Significance or something like that.
Yeah, so that's kind of like what I kind of think about when I think about all those old videos. Everything kind of had that similar, very hand-drawn style of the time.
And Flash has that kind of DNA. Like, if you were super supremely good at it, you could make Flash look like it's not Flash. And then as the years went by, it was easier to kind of do that. And like Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, for example, I'm pretty sure is Flash animated.
Holy shit.
That's insane. Yeah. That's completely insane.
Well, let me check that.
I believe it. I mean,
like, I believe it, but wow.
It's crazy. It's crazy that Flash just doesn't exist.
She's pretty gonzo.
Flash, like, dominated my childhood.
Produced by Cartoon Network Studios as the network's first show animated primarily with Adobe Flash.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so Foster's was primarily Flash.
I want to rewatch it now. Oh my god.
I rewatched it recently. But yeah, Flash kind of had this particular flavor to it, and you kind of always knew it was there most of the time, which was cool. It was a cool quirk.
I was just going to say it was like the aesthetic of the internet at the time. Like, everything was kind of defined by that style. Like, anything you could play, like, video game or, like, a web animation. Even comics sort of, like, carried over that style a little bit because it was just so prominent in everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, like, Control-Alt-Delete, for example, is a very flashy, not flashy in the terms of, like, extravagant, but flashy as in looks like it was made with Flash.
Yeah.
That's an example. Or, Cyanide and Happiness, any of those big name web comics from that generation, and the games, like you said, and the animated stuff, and Newgrounds you mentioned, and the Lampshade game. It was all, some of it had assets that were pixel stuff from video games that had already been made or whatever, and even that stuff ended up looking off because it was animated as like a cycle and then moved around the screen synthetically instead of being pixel perfect. So I completely understand what you mean by the vibe that it had.
Yeah.
Piggybacking off the idea of both games and chat rooms, I think you were the first person that introduced me to games like Gaia Online and MapleStory, yeah, which we've talked about on the show a little bit before, but I think you played those probably more than I did.
Yeah, I love those games. I was always kind of drawn into like the art style of like manga and anime. I didn't really watch it as a kid, but I always thought that the style just looked great. I would get like those like how to draw manga books and like draw it in sketchbooks in my free time. And then like, you know, a game like Gaia Online comes out and you get to like sort of create your own anime character, and everybody there is like super big on it. And like, I remember at the time specifically, Death Note was really popular, and I think that's how I found out about it. So like, a lot of the stuff that I know and love now was kind of discovered through these weird little like microcosm environments. But I loved Gaia Online. That was weird. You guys talked about like the Scion event, like the chocolate Skittles and stuff. That was just crazy. Like, I think there's also, they like advertised for Axe body spray.
Yes.
Put another needle and on the time. MapleStory, I played a little bit. I played that. I loved it, but my mom found out I was playing it. She didn't really understand those kind of games. So to her, I was just like a kid in a chat room, and everybody else is like an adult. Like, clearly, most people playing that were like kids. So she found out I was playing it, and then I basically didn't ever play it again for years. I think I was like grounded for like a year from using my laptop.
Yeah, I think that the Stranger Danger thing, I do think it's valid. I think that internet security is very, like, has gotten lax with the younger generation. So I'm not saying that going online and listing your full government name and where you live and shit like that is, like, a good idea. But I do also think that when we were that age, there was a perception, I mean, basically, people our parents' age predicted the modern age, that there was always going to be some weird guy secretly looking at you through your screen, which at the time was science fiction, but now it's true.
It really wasn't like, I mean, I'm sure it was like that for some people, but my experience was like totally normal. Like nothing crazy ever happened. And like, obviously I knew better as well than to like post personal stuff online or to engage with like creeps and freaks.
Right.
But it was just hard to convey that, especially because I was so young and on these things. But yeah, I lived in a neighborhood with no kids in it. And pretty much all I could do was like get online and like hang out. So I loved that stuff. I really loved all that. Guy Online was cool. I loved like customizing my little anime guy.
I really sympathize with what you said about, I really liked the anime aesthetic, but I didn't really know what anime or manga was. I had probably caught a couple of episodes of Inuyasha on Adult Swim, or I'd probably seen a couple Ghibli movies, and I could tell that there was something different about them from like the normal cartoons that I watched, but I couldn't tell you what.
Yeah, and it came on really late on Adult Swim too, so you kind of thought like you maybe weren't supposed to be watching it, because you're like, why are they putting this stuff at like 2 o'clock in the morning? But yeah, I remember being at your house, like falling asleep in my room, and Inuyasha would come on, and that was always kind of surreal.
Poochie, I wanted to ask, because you brought up a good point, was you said that there weren't really any kids that lived in your neighborhood, and that's true for me too. So I wonder, is that like a running theme with people that were online a lot as young people?
Yeah, I mean, like there was kids in my neighborhood, but I grew up in like rural suburban Ohio, so like my neighbors were not close necessarily. So I did turn to the internet a lot, and I was also just like a dork. So internet it was.
I do want to briefly talk about, there is a very well-written post by Tumblr user The Trash Bang talking about basically how when we were that age and moving into the early 2010s, online social spaces were effectively like a good, well, maybe not good, but they were an accessible third space for people to go online and hang out. And like games like Counter-Strike or Halo to an extent, you could reasonably get on the same server with the same people at about the same time, more or less every day, and have a community that existed that way. And with, you know, for kids specifically, there was Club Penguin and Gaia and stuff like that. And that is going away a lot now. Yeah. And the way that matchmaking is structured in online games is completely different. The way that voice chat works in online games is very different. You have to like actively seek somebody out to add them if you thought they played good, I guess. So it's a very antisocial trend that we find ourselves moving towards, which is a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, it's hard to find community-based stuff now. I mean, everything that like you could be into now as a kid is like being super condensed. Like Roblox is kind of like all-encompassing now, but there's not like specific, like you said, there's no like specific community you could load into every day or every night. Like see like the usuals. You're just always playing with random people unless you're playing with your friends. And I mean, it's like that any other even remotely social game now. So it does kind of suck.
Yeah, there's no more like loading into the Alpine server after school, certainly.
Yeah.
We spent tons of hours in, what was it called, the Outpost?
Yeah, we were beyond regulars for several years in a Team Fortress 2 community set of servers called the Outpost, or OPST, shout out if anybody from that time is still alive.
Those servers, I check in on those servers maybe once or twice a year, and they seldom have more than 2 people across all their different servers, if they are even still running.
Yeah, it's depressing, man. I mean, I mean, obviously Team Fortress 2 is dead in general, but well, every time I check, like they maybe have like 2 servers running now at any point. I think the versus Saxon Hail thing that we played the most, they still have the server, but it's like it's always empty. I remember I'd get home from school and I'd have to like wait for an hour for somebody to leave before I could actually get into the server.
Yeah, I remember that. And it was especially frustrating for me because my PC at the time It wasn't even a potato. It was a sweet potato. It was virtually incapable of running more than 12 frames per second, but I tried. God damn it, I tried.
Yeah, I remember that.
It will bring you some amount of... it will fill you with some amount of determination to know that the kids that I interact with on a regular basis still know what Gmod is, and they referenced TF2. One of the kids said, "Bro, you're not the spy."
Oh my gosh, that's actually so crazy.
That made me have a little bit of hope.
To like kids nowadays has to be like what Team Fortress Classic was to us when we were playing Team Fortress 2, and that game's old as dirt now. I have Team Fortress 2 on the... I think it actually might be your game. Is it your copy of the Orange Box?
That copy of the Orange Box, I think, originally belonged to your mom's ex-boyfriend, Gary.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like a cartoon name.
The Orange Box. Team Fortress 2 on that is just like a throwback for the 360. I mean, sheesh.
So, along with some of that chat roomy, gamey type stuff, which we talked a little bit about before on the show, is that some of these places were ostensibly just chat rooms that happened to have a GUI that looked a little like a game.
Yeah.
And another famous example of something like that, which is slightly more game-ish, I think, is like Second Life. Do you remember anything about Second Life?
I do. I remember there was a very thin period of time where I was like invested in it earnestly because you had found out about it. And then I got really into like getting on and like messing with people.
I remember my two standout experiences with Second Life. There was one time that we had the classic Sony Vaio that I mentioned before, and it had like one of those green microphone ports that, you know, is the same plug as the headphone jack, but it was green. That's probably still common, but I think a lot of microphones these days are USB. But anyway, we had this really cheap microphone that I don't even know what to compare it to. It was kind of the same shape as one of those ones you would see at the front desk of like a big box store where they call on the intercom, but it was maybe like a dime's worth of plastic and the thinnest cable in the world. And I tried to chat on Second Life, but I was a middle schooler and everybody on there was either a older teenager or like young adult, and the microphone quality was ass and my character was default skin and my voice hadn't dropped yet or whatever. And so everybody on there just laughed me out of the server basically, and it felt horrible.
Oh my god. Yeah. Second Life always felt a little too real for me.
And then the other thing I remember from Second Life was that I joined were they called worlds? Because they weren't really called servers, or maybe they were, but I joined a world that by default it made your character like naked or something, and you had to like go buy the clothes. And I think that was probably the last time I ever played the game, because I got so scared that my parents were going to see my character naked that I closed it and never opened it back up.
Yeah, that's insane.
I know that at one point you said that you maybe wanted to talk about maybe Salad Fingers in particular. You mentioned it a little minute ago, and I wanted to circle back to that.
Oh, yeah.
Because you binged the series.
Yeah, I was super late to it. I probably watched it about like 7 years ago or something. It's very narratively like amazing. I don't really remember it all that well because I only watched it the one time, but I remember I was like captivated by it. But it, I don't think, was anything that anyone under the age of like 15 needed to be watching, because it was intense. But I knew like kids that were watching it. But that was kind of like another like through line of the times, was like we were all just kind of watching stuff that wasn't age appropriate, because there really wasn't like any sort of like prohibition to that like there is now. Like a lot of people get aged out of stuff pretty easily, but you kind of just like made like a sort of mature cartoon, you put it on the internet, everybody just watched it.
Right. And there was then, and still kind of is, this notion that it's like, oh well, it's cartoons, it must be for kids.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people watch Salad Fingers, because it's like silly looking. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I don't know, the way Salad Fingers talks about himself is like erotic, almost a little uncomfortable, but like it's actually got like lore. It's like dense.
I haven't seen much Salad Fingers, But I do remember a video from the same creator from around the same time called The Dog of Man. Have you seen it? Have either of you seen it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I didn't see this until I was a college freshman. It is, in no hyperbole, tremendously fucked up.
Yeah, it looks disturbing.
I will give you a brief synopsis if you don't want to watch it. Or if you do want to watch it, then I won't spoil it, because then you can experience how tremendously fucked up it is for yourself.
No, you can describe it for people who are listening. Probably won't want.
Basically, there is this dog that seems to have some level of intelligence, and this human person that is nonverbal in some way and is making horrific body modifications to the dog. And I think that the person has modified the dog to have a voice box, not completely unlike the one from the movie Up, but a robot piece will come up out of the dog's head, and then megaphone will come out of the dog's mouth when the dog needs to speak. And then the guy starts doing body mods on himself, and he cuts his arms and legs off, and then replaces them with the dog's arms and legs by cutting the dog's arms and legs off. And then the guy goes to the store and buys a packet of seeds that says tumor seeds, and then he digs a bunch of holes in his skin and gives himself cancer, and then he chops the dog's head off and puts his head on the dog's body.
Yeah, that tracks. Salad Fingers was crazy, gory, which I wasn't expecting really when I watched it, because I thought that it was something that kids enjoyed.
Speaking of internet cartoons that looked childish but were gory, do you want to guess where I'm going with this?
I got a guess.
Uh-huh.
What was it called? Happy Tree Friends or something?
Yeah, was it Smiling Happy
Tree Happy Friends? Tree Friends. Friends. I can hear the theme song in my head at the mere mention of Happy Tree Friends. Oh, no.
Yeah, that was kind of early, Rickrolling people, hey, look at this cute cartoon. And then all of a sudden you're watching animals get blown to smithereens.
Yeah. Yeah, watching their eyeballs get turned into lemonade. I'm literally scarred by this one episode.
Found it truly disgusting. When I was that age, I didn't find a lot of stuff disturbing like that. Not to say that I'm edgy or whatever, but that got to me for some reason. I don't know if it was the contrast between the characters and then the detail on the gore. But for example, I remember the Moose character, he gets scalped and you can see his brain, and then they're messing with his brain and it's making parts of his body move or something like that.
I couldn't watch that stuff. It's just I've always been a little squeamish, but that crossed a line for me for sure when I was a kid. I just couldn't.
So I couldn't watch it's that. Really gross, but I do work in veterinary medicine now, so maybe it affected me and made me stronger.
Yeah.
Built transferable up skills.
The gore. I was ready for it.
So with that same aesthetic, and this is again something that we talked about before. We talked a little bit about Q-Boy. Do you remember Catface? I think that's one that we watched almost the entire series of.
I did not remember it until Poochie just posted it, and then it felt like something got forcefully pulled out of the back of my mind.
The theme song runs through my head on pretty much a daily basis.
Oh my god, yeah. It's genuinely a really good theme song.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, because we were watching the hell out of a bunch of animated series this. It makes me wonder how many of them I've just totally forgotten about.
Well, yeah. There was Q-Boy, and then Q-Boy had a game that was
Q-Boy had a game. I remember more of the game actually than I do the actual animation.
And he was chipper, but he was also kind of an asshole. I remember that. Do you remember when there was a series? Okay, so to talk a little bit more about what the kinds of stuff that could exist on YouTube 10 plus years ago that just couldn't be made anymore, not for political correctness sake or anything, but just because it's not TikTokified.
Yeah, guidelines, I feel have changed dramatically since then. There really wasn't a framework.
That's true, too. There was not a framework, but is it a good idea to microwave this?
Oh, which, yeah. Banger series.
It's exactly what it says on the tin. They would just take shit and throw it in the fucking microwave.
Yeah, that was an era of YouTube where you you could just be successful if you're like consistently uploading yourself doing like just anything random, literally. Like they literally were just microwaving stuff, and we were just sitting there like glued to the screen. Like, damn, that is crazy if you microwave that. They were like put almost burning down their house like half the episodes though.
Right. It really was such a different culture. Do you guys remember How To stuff?
How To Basic.
Yeah. Thank you.
How To Basic was what came to mind there. Yeah, that was crazy. Like the Filthy Frank era of things.
And How To Basic, I think, set a precedent for it. It laid the framework for a new kind of YouTube video where things were done bad on purpose in a violent way.
Yeah, it was like the start of like, I don't want to say it was the start of like widespread irony online, because obviously it did, like it had to start somewhere else, but like videos that are like those videos you see nowadays on Instagram of like some white woman in her kitchen and she's making the most disgusting meal you've ever seen in your life, and she's like, I give this to my family once a week, and you know that they don't do that. But it's like they put like a raw steak in like a glass pan, and then they like fill it up with like chicken noodle soup or something.
Or those videos where it's like a conventionally attractive white person in a pristine, enormous kitchen, and then they dump a stock pot full of syrup over like a fucking dinner plate full of pancakes.
Yeah, the caption's like, when I buy syrup with my own money, and they do like a drop of syrup, and then it's like, when my parents pay for the syrup, and then they like just waste a bunch of food. I definitely think How To Basic was on the ground for that trend.
And I mean, not to do that thing where old thing good, new thing bad, but How To Basic's version of that, I think, was more creative because A, he didn't speak, or they didn't speak. I guess we don't know who this person is. And it was always like a little freaky. I remember a running gag where there would be like a raw fish.
Oh yes. Always the raw fish. He would put it in the toilet. He would shove firecrackers in it. He would smack it on a baby doll. It was surrealist horror art.
Yeah, and you never knew if he was kidding because he never broke character.
Mm-hmm. Not once.
Like, obviously, you're led to believe that he was kidding because things would get so out of hand in the video, but the description was always totally normal. The picture was always totally normal. And even like the first like 5 minutes maybe would be like totally normal stuff.
Am I remembering correctly? But did he sometimes, he would like, sometimes he would voraciously slap the fish.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes he would caress it and shush it on its
often mouth. Back to back.
yeah. It was always a combo.
The 1-2 punch, the slap and shush. So yeah, How To Basic was, like you said, kind of the same ballpark area as Filthy Frank and Critical when he still did games and Donkey. What's your experience with those fellers?
Yeah, that era of the internet, like, I feel like dramatically changed my life.
Yeah, and Critical, when he still did, like, Let's Plays type stuff and, like, video game reaction stuff. And then Donkey, video game Donkey.
Yeah, the goat.
Well, the donkey, not a goat.
Yeah, I found out about, I guess, all of that stuff freshman year of high school.
Yeah, I watched the hell out of that, and I think I learned about a lot of video games that I played later or thought were funny. Do you remember the Japanese horse racing game that I think Donkey played?
Japonies. Yes. It was Vine Sauce, and it was people that aren't on Vine Sauce anymore. Karibo Elegy.
Getting Chitty Boy.
Yeah, I wanted to play that game so bad, but I couldn't figure out how to download it.
There was a period of time that things from Japan that were just strange like that were really popular. Like the dog costume chip advertisement.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was weird. Like
Consume.
I think was in a similar era.
What was it?
Nannerpuss.
Poochie, do you remember Nannerpuss?
I don't think I do, but I do remember the Consomme Panji dog.
And then I have a bad case of diarrhea.
I don't remember that. What was that?
It was, I honestly don't fucking know what it was. It looks like an exercise video, but it's these Japanese women doing like a yoga type exercise routine, and they're just chanting, I have a bad case of diarrhea. That's pretty much the whole video. What about Mame Shiba? Do you guys know Mame Shiba?
No.
Mame Shiba, I think it translates to bean dog.
Oh, I'm looking at it right now. These are weird. I've never seen this before.
They're so fucking funny.
They're cute.
They're like little miniature PSAs, and it's almost always like a kid that's eating a bean product, and then one of the beans will roll over, and it's got a little dog face, and this unsettling music plays, and then Mame Shiba will give you a fact that is technically helpful, but slightly disturbing.
Yeah, it was definitely a weird point in time where like just random advertisements were going viral. Like the Nanerpuss, I don't think was an ad originally. It was like an early form like shit post basically. But then like Denny's did one.
Yes, that sounds correct. I was trying to work that out in my mind, but that sounds correct. I think it was a play on Cakey the Whale, which is, I think, an ice cream cake shaped like a whale from a regional chain somewhere in New England.
Yeah, I've heard of that before.
Fudgy the Whale. He's called Fudgy the Whale. And I think Nanerpuss is a knock at that. But then you're right. Denny's made their own version of Nanerpuss to cash in on the meme, which happens kind of a lot.
I think they actually did use Nanerpuss for an ad.
I think you're right. Have you seen, there's a modern ad, I think it's for the General Insurance Company, and they use Bad Luck Brian. It's actually, it's him, like it's actually him as like an adult, and it's just like, you guys missed the boat by almost 20 years.
I think you guys kind of reached out to him like when this was even remotely funny.
Nobody, like, I guess the people that would recognize him are now getting to insurance buying age. So I guess I kind of get it, but those people grew up alongside stuff that advanced so quickly that you might as well put it, here come that boy, oh shit, what up?
You want to know what's going to sell me on insurance? Nyan Cat. Just have Nyan Cat fly across the screen. I'm sold.
Unfortunately, Nyan Cat was minted into an NFT by his creator.
I forgot about that. Damn.
Yeah. That's the guy terrible. That made it minted him into an NFT.
That just depressed me. Yeah. Just totally. No, I mean, not super off topic, but the floor price. You could own Nyan Cat for $500.
Like the NFT?
Yeah.
Small price to pay for Nanny.
That's the buy-in. I mean, I'm sure when the idiot made these, the price was like thousands of dollars. It's just so stupid.
This is related both to what we were talking about a minute ago with the strange kind of YouTube videos that were popular in the early 2010s and also Nyan Cat. But there was a YouTube channel that I discovered. I don't know if they were even really that popular, but it was, what's the word? Symptomatic of the kind of things that were funny at the time. And what the video that made me discover their channel at all was Nyan Cat Smooth Jazz Cover. And it's just, I mean, it's them singing the Nyan Cat song, but like slow. And it sounds kind of nice. But they've got these really goofy, quote-unquote, commercials that are pretty non-sequitur, like this one called Doritos Advert. Now that I'm looking back at their content with the hindsight of knowing the different shit that I know about now, I think a lot of this early stuff was inspired by the series Whitest Kids You Know.
Yeah, that stuff was super influential.
Did either of you watch a lot of Whitest Kids You Know?
I didn't watch it beyond, I think, the one skit that probably is inappropriate to mention on the podcast, with the grape.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, that's like the only thing I've seen.
Oh, damn. My brain always goes to the gallon of PCP.
I remember There's one where they're selling a ring called the finger ring, and it's like, get yourself a good finger ring, give a finger ring to your friend. And there's another one, and I think it's Whitest Kids You Know, where a guy is in a meeting, and instead of going to the bathroom, he like poops during the meeting and then just pulls the turd out of his pants and throws it in the trash can, and that completely derails the meeting. And everybody's like, did you just throw a turd in the trash can? And he's like, what? I didn't want to miss anything.
Yeah, that was actually, oh my gosh, I just was remembered. Do you remember, like, there was two guys who would do a skit, who would do skits?
I think I know where you're going with this.
I don't remember what they were called, Barat and Beretta or something.
Was it the one is laid on the floor and he's like, I'm a pee? And he's like,
yeah,
I'm an ice cream. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Derek?
Barats and Beretta. 18 years ago. Jesus, the quality on all these is so chopped. And there's also that one guy who did the, hold on, I'll find the name. I don't know that I want to say the name of the song. John LaJoie. You remember him?
John LaJoie, yes.
John LaJoie.
He, with the parody music, sort of. I still think about John LaJoie's parody music, like,
constantly. I killed people 15 years ago.
And I want to say he's still doing stuff, but I'm not sure.
Let's see. Yeah, I mean, he's making stuff as of 10 months ago.
It's interesting
a lot how more much, serious now.
Yeah. It's interesting how much of the internet in its infancy, well, not infancy because, you know, but during this time period that we're describing, a lot of what you see come out of the internet from that sort of mid to late 2000s, early 2010s, all of it is like comedy. And there was obviously a side of the internet that was not all comedy. There was business stuff and news stuff happening too. But like so much of the entertainment stuff was specifically comedy and not a lot of drama stuff and not a lot of like celebrity stuff. And I'm sure that that existed out there, but that's not my experience.
Yeah.
And I guess we're talking about two different channels here, because the one I posted is from Balloon.
Yeah, I realized that just like all these videos were just like in the same vein of like kind of absurd humor. It was always short. Like the video I sent's like a minute long.
Oh, here is a name that will bring you back. Do either of you guys remember Syriac?
Yes, I do. My mom showed me him, I think. That used to be like the coolest thing I'd ever seen on YouTube.
Poochie, do you remember Syriac?
I'm struggling here. I don't think I do.
One of his famous videos is called Kitty City, and all of his videos had this thing. It was like the entire thing was made in like After Effects. And so he would just take like a PNG or short video of a cat and then, yeah, here we go, like modify it to be a beast. And there would be an unsettling song playing in the background.
It was like fucking looping fascinating. Animation.
Mm-hmm. And like the song it's playing is, what'd you say?
Oh, I just said it was almost like generative animation.
Yes. Yeah, it's very strange. And the music is directly linked to what's happening in the actual video, which is interesting. I'm watching Kitty City right now.
Yeah, it was crazy. I think, didn't he compose the music too?
Probably. Do you remember Cool Guy Has a Chill Day?
Yes, I do. It's Cool Guy. There's a little bit of a racist thing in it, but it's kind of just a product of the time.
Well, yeah, and that didn't even occur to me when the video was like relevant.
No, at the time it was just funny, but you know, looking back now,
looking and back, like, it's like
juggling watermelon and grape soda. It's like, all right.
He's very clearly a caricature.
Do you remember the Hydeer Shake McDonald's ad videos?
The what now?
Hydeer Shake was the name of the channel.
Yes, I do, like, remember these
McDonald's ads.
I do not.
I sent probably the one that we're the most familiar with, because it's like a period of time. I found this, I don't even remember. I think someone that I was friends with on Team Fortress 2 sent me one of their videos. And it was like a channel with like 200 subscribers at the time. Like as bottom of the barrel as you could probably skim on YouTube. But they have these funny commercials with these off-brand Sonic characters.
Well, in this one that we're talking about, the characters are just the Sonic characters. They're just modeled very badly.
They're advertising those shitty little, like, Game & Watch style games.
Right. And two things that this makes me think of, the first of which is, I remember when McDonald's Happy Meals toys actually had the little one or two button games, Sonic Adventure 2, but I think it was I think they came out alongside the GameCube re-release, the battle version. I still have the Shadow one, and it still works with the original battery and everything.
Yeah, we used to play those a lot, I remember.
I play the, well, maybe not the shit out of that game, but I do play it somewhat regularly still. The second thing is, this style of video was early in its run where we kind of see the surrealist animation stuff in the middle 2010s with like Ratboy Genius and the Jimmy Family Power Hour or whatever, and less animation but still that same kind of, like, it looks, there's a thing called the shitty aesthetic that it appeals to, Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, and just things that look weird on purpose, which I think is adequately described as the grandchild of those Flash animations we talked about a minute ago, with like Salad Fingers being sort of the prototype amongst the primordial ooze that became Ratboy Genius and shit like that.
Definitely. Yeah, it's weird. Like, this was something that was obviously made, like, somebody's probably proud of this, you know. And, you know, for good reason, the video's a banger. But it very quickly, like, within a few years, became, like, a style that people wanted to emulate.
Yes.
And that dominated online for a long time.
It's so hard, at least with this, and to some extent with Ratboy Genius, it's, I guess, irony is the only way to describe it, because it's very hard to discern the intent of the creator. You know, it's like, was this made as a real attempt to depict a Sonic commercial? Because I don't think this is a real commercial that aired overseas or in another country, but it could have been, I guess.
You don't think so?
It looks like it's on purpose. It looks like it's a shit post. And like Ratboy Genius, I can't tell if the low quality of it is the point, or if somebody is trying to tell a story that they don't have the skills to make look any better.
If it's any consolation, the last several videos uploaded to this channel are just random, I don't want to call them Arabian videos, but it's literally McArabia grilled chicken, McArabia kofta, TVC, and then McFlurry with like foreign actors, and then just this long string of shitty 3D modeled videos. Hello Kitty, a bunch of them are just the McDonald's characters. Crash Bandicoot, oh, that's crazy.
Oh, I see Bandicoot. Yep, there. Oh, and the funny thing is, these videos have hundreds of thousands of views, but the channel only has 1,000 subscribers.
And I'm one of them. Well, proudly.
Because I've seen this GIF of Crash and Neocortex on Tumblr before, and I've seen a GIF from the Sonic one on Tumblr before, just making the rounds as like a reaction image. and I don't know if people know the context.
No, this is like, this is tucked deep away. The Bobbers one was pretty impressive too, of all the characters shittily modeled and dancing around, and then they fly off in a UFO and there's this crazy song playing. It's like thick accent but singing in English.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly like a thing.
Yeah, I loved these kind of videos. These kinds of videos scratched my brain like crazy when I was younger.
And this aesthetic that looks slightly bad on purpose, like, still exists with a thin layer of polish on it now in the form of like Smiling Friends and like Rick and Morty, I guess, to an extent.
Do you remember Sick Animation?
Yes. Well, he's in Smiling Friends. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I brought it up. I couldn't believe when I saw that episode that Sick Animation was in it. It like completely caught me off guard.
He's Mr. Boss.
Wait,
he is Mr. Boss. That's why Mr. Boss looks like that, but he's the voice.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The hell? I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And there's an episode. It's the one where they're trying to hatch the egg with the mad scientist. Yeah,
that's the one I was thinking of, where they actually have like the sick animation style video.
Right.
We watched like hundreds of those videos, like in one weekend, one day when we were younger.
We watched a lot of it, and that's another example of content that does not hold up in terms of, like, you know.
That's stuff that we can like kind of relish in as like nostalgia, but you just could not show that to like say like your coworker in this modern world.
No, certainly not. And a lot of it, I'm not even comfortable going back to watch.
Yeah, there's a period I'm glad we grew out of like, but I will say it was formulative, but I'm glad that we kind of moved past it, like the edgy era of the internet, where like you kind of like wanted to be as offensive and unpalatable as you could be online for the sake of like getting a laugh.
I think that same sensibility still exists in two different like ways. I think that there are two different types of online poster now that have the common ancestor of the edgelord. I'm thinking about that one art from a Yu-Gi-Oh card where there's a person with like a dark path and a light path. That's what I'm thinking of. But if the edgelord went down the dark path, they are now like QAnon people and people that's like, you know, but if they went down the light path, now they're trans and talk about wanting to bark like a dog for somebody.
Yeah, that's true.
So the edge is still there. It just has kept up with the times in a politically divisive way, I guess.
Yeah, and the most ironic thing is, you know, those two different groups obviously got the similar sense of humor from one starting point and just hate each other.
It's they took very different things away. From
iDubbbz, I guess, is a really good example. I used to love his videos when I was younger. Obviously, he was saying stuff he shouldn't have said in those videos. It didn't really matter at the time, because I feel like as a society, we weren't really concerned with how messages online like affected people in real life, or like just like who they were catering to. I feel like people weren't really super present about their audiences. Like, if you had an audience, it was great.
And the awareness of that sort of thing evaded us as younger people, I think.
Yeah. And now, like, obviously iDubbbz has walked it back 1,000 miles. He's apologized. He's removed all the videos. And then you have people still who are, like, mad that, like, he doesn't still think that way. Like, 10 years later, he is a little bit regretful of the hateful stuff he said online. Like, you have people that like will just rage about that.
And I think that's a fair point, is that, yeah, the best time to think about your words and your actions is before you post them on the internet. But thinking about them afterwards and realizing that, hey, words have like a real impact on people and communities, and acknowledging that and trying to learn from it in like a genuine way, it's like that's still worth something. And human people are capable of change, by and large. I've seen it said best is that people are less concerned about doing right as they are about not doing wrong. And so there's this fundamentalism that comes with like being chronically online, basically, that because the way that our society is structured to put so much emphasis on like revenge, you know, like our justice system is a revenge system. Like the notion of heaven and hell is a revenge system. It's very Western, you know, but that's still pervasive amongst a lot of the online population. I think it's difficult for people to demonstrate their personal growth because of the seeming permanence of the internet. It kind of turns time into a flat circle. Like, you can look at the timestamp on a post, but your consumption of it is no different seeing it today than it would have been seeing it when it was posted 10 plus years ago. So you lose a dimension of time looking at stuff from the internet.
Yeah.
Now we've gotten political.
I feel like now people like, there's like a certain grace period if you were posting before like 2015. Like, anything awful you could have said past a certain year is basically forgiven as long as you never did it like from like 2015 and beyond. But like if you even slip up even a little bit now, even being like the same age that we could have been in like 2012, 2013, you say something out of line and like you basically have like no chance for redemption.
Well, and it also, I think, has a lot to do with like who you were when you said those things, because it's like also, to be fair, iDubbbz was already an adult when he was making those videos.
Yeah, that's true. He was pretty old. He was like, what, like 23 or something?
So on maybe one hand, it's like, yeah, it may have been somewhat a product of the time. And yeah, you've changed and grown. But also, you were already like college graduate aged. So
past the point of knowing better, to be fair.
I don't know how much we should hold your hand, but at least you're different now. And the worst alternative, obviously, is somebody like PewDiePie or JonTron, who doubles down on it and, you know, says that they didn't do anything wrong, and then just continues to say the bigoted stuff out loud anyway, still.
Yeah, what I want from my Game Grumps Sonic06 playing YouTuber is to hear his thoughts on crime statistics.
Christ.
That was crazy. The PewDiePie bridge incident was also a little bit insane and unhinged, and then he kind of like got more popular after that.
Poochie, what's your weigh in on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little hairy for sure, but there's something to be said about major cultural shifts and like further education on like, you know, the shit you shouldn't be saying, because I don't know. I think that intent matters quite a bit, and people who weren't coming from necessarily a place of malice, who weren't maybe thinking about what they were saying, it's like, you know, they're more likely to change and less likely to double down and turn into your, like you said, like,
that edgy stuff from like 12 years ago was just so crazy. It's crazy that the internet took such a hard pivot in the total opposite. I mean, it's not crazy to think that you're basically popular for like saying slurs online.
Yeah.
And now like there's no room for that, which there shouldn't be. That exists for so long.
I feel like a lot of that has to be just the internet growing, right? Like there's way more people on it now than there were before.
That's true.
I also think that there have always been people that were justifiably outraged by that grew in numbers just through other like-minded people aging into that mindset. And then eventually those voices became loud enough for companies like Meta and fucking X, formerly Twitter, and shit like that, to realize that their advertisers didn't want to be associated with, you know, the bad stuff. And that kind of plays into like rainbow capitalism a little bit, where, you know, Budweiser has a rainbow flag for a month and it pisses conservatives off, but it also doesn't really do anything for marginalized.
They made the beers gay.
They made the beers gay. So it's like that. It's the sterilization of the internet because of capitalism.
Yeah, it's gotten super sterilized. I think about it pretty often. Like, I guess would be a good segue into the stumble upon stuff. But like, people don't really browse the internet anymore. Like, we used to like get on sites like every day. We'd probably visit like 20 different sites.
That's absolutely true.
Everything is kind of like homogenous. Like you get on Instagram, you get on Facebook, you get on Twitter, X. It's kind of like you're getting fed the same slop in different colors.
It's the Taco Bell effect.
Yeah. You get on TikTok, you see a TikTok video. You get on YouTube Shorts, it's a re-uploaded TikTok video. You get on Instagram Reels, it's re-uploaded TikToks. Everything you could ever want to see at this point is like hyper condensed.
Right. Whereas
back in our day, like, you actually had to like seek shit out if you wanted to see it.
And I think that the pervasiveness of smart devices has contributed to that, because there's the appification of the internet. You know, a lot of young people have never touched like a physical computer with like an actual mouse and keyboard anymore. So I think that apps have a lot to do with that. maybe. And the fact that we call every program an app now. When I was like a kid, you know, you called them programs, or if it was a game, you called it a game, but now everything's an app, not to be an old man yelling at the cloud.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know, I guess you still would, like, quote unquote, browse the web. If you googled something, you're obviously gonna hit a bunch of different links to find what exactly it is you're looking for, but it's kind of like a use case sort of thing. Like, you're not doing it for fun, like, you're trying to find something that isn't, like, immediately in front of you anymore, as opposed to, like, surfing the web as, like, a form of amusement.
It's a mind-numbing, like, tool. It's a thing to not experience reality, which I guess it was at that point, too, but there was a finite amount of internet that you could scroll. You know, you could only go to so many useless websites before you were like, all right, that's enough of that for the day, and then you go sit in front of the bigger screen.
I felt like I was learning back then, but now it doesn't really feel like I use the internet for any other reason than to, like, fry my brain.
Right, yes. There was a sense of curiosity about things, even if they weren't, like, quote-unquote productive. You know, you would see something that was just r/mildly interesting, and there it was. Speaking of which, when I, up until like 4 years ago, I didn't use Reddit because I considered Reddit the lazy man's internet, because it was like they took all of the interesting stuff they had found everywhere else and just plopped it in front of you. Was the TV dinner of internet.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, Reddit's fine. Reddit's fine if you're not on like main page subreddits. If you're on like a subreddit for like a community for something you care about, it's totally fine. But if you're like on like r/ like pics or something and you go to the comments, it's like genuinely like a slop fest.
Cesspool. Yep. Hive of scum and villainy.
Like the most irrational person you know is letting it ring in the comments.
Somebody who is completely dedicated to misunderstanding you.
Yeah.
That was my experience on Reddit most of the time anyway. Even on more or less curated communities. But that's neither here nor there, I guess. I think that we have cast a pretty broad net on the past and the nostalgia for the internet. So what are you kind of up to these days online?
Right now, I got into screen printing like a year ago. It's something I've wanted to do for probably like 7 years. I just never had the balls to do it because it seems a lot more complicated than it is. It is complicated, but it's not like you don't need like a degree to get into it. It's just, it's a lot of perseverance mainly. But in order to kind of stay inspired, I like to look back and reference stuff that I really enjoyed when I was younger on the internet. Stuff that I feel like, for better or for worse, is kind of like fizzled out by this point, like stuff that people don't really think about anymore.
Two of your prints that I have purchased for myself, I think are perfect examples of that, because one of which is the top text, bottom text, impact font style meme of your, and I think that's great. And then you've also got a print of like the blue screen of death. Mm-hmm. The pre-Windows 10 blue screen of death, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, the new one's ugly. I don't like it.
No,
it's too friendly.
It's too friendly. It's too,
What are you, politely telling me my computer just shat itself?
Right, yeah, it's sterilized, and there's a little emoticon. And that's a trend that has happened, you know, over the last decade or so, where websites had useless fucking error messages where they would say, oopsie doopsie, our code monkey hit a wall. And it's like, tell me what fucking happened.
Because Tumblr had something like that for a while.
Yeah, the Tumbeasts ate your post.
Yeah, I hated seeing those ugly motherfuckers.
Poochie, do you remember the Tumbeasts?
Of course I remember the Tumbeasts. I have unironically considered getting a Tumbeast tattoo.
That'd be crazy, actually. That'd be fire.
I would get a Tumbeast plushie if they ever made one.
I might have to just make one.
Finally ugly.
It would be really funny if you had some sort of, like, scar, or if you like, something like that. You had to get, like, something removed, and then you got the Tumbeast, and it said, like, your pinky wasn't found.
The Tumbeast got away with your liver.
Yeah, you wake up in a bathtub full of ice and the fucking, what's the guy that they call Daddy on Tumblr?
Oh my gosh, it's by the oatmeal. Do you remember?
David Karp, the creator.
Yeah, you wake up in David Karp's basement in a tub of ice.
I gave a presentation on Tumblr to a graphic design class, and I did discuss to a class of a bunch of, I don't know, they're probably, what, 20-year-olds, like, about the whole David Karp and Daddy thing, and they're like, what the fuck?
If it makes you feel any better, I did a presentation to a gender studies class about Steven Universe.
That kind of just makes sense for you.
Yeah, that was cringe-worthy.
I feel like it was kind of an obligation to give a really cringy speech in college. I remember I gave one about, in my public speaking class, we were supposed to do like a persuasive speech, and I gave a speech about how I thought 9/11 was staged.
Oh my gosh.
And keep in mind, this is like 2015, 2016.
How did that go over?
It was in line with like just being edgy for the sake of it, but a girl in my class for our next series of speeches had to be like, like appeal to something or whatever. Hers was about her church, and she like name dropped me in the middle of her speech.
Weird.
And like stared at me about how like some people could benefit from going to church.
Oh my god. She said you need Jesus.
Pretty much.
Fucking call out post.
I still think my argument was pretty compelling, but definitely not the time or the place.
Well, you win some, you lose some, I guess.
But yeah, what brought us to the Tum Beasts?
Well, we were talking about how useless modern error messaging is.
Yeah, it's so sterile now. It's so boring.
Well, it's like they think people can't handle seeing the numbers and the guts. And maybe in some case that's like true. But those people are going to get the same amount out of the Tum Beasts as they would getting like a 502 bad gateway error. Whereas somebody who knows what that means, that like it's the Pascal's wager of like postmodern Ludditism, where like if you sterilize it, nobody wins. But if you take it at face value, the layperson still doesn't get any information out of, but they can just close the tab. But somebody, like, if the problem's on my end, I want to know that. If the website is just down, I would like to know that. I don't know. Yes. But I never realized that these were oatmeal creations, like you just said.
Yeah, that kind of blew like my mind. I knew they looked familiar. He kind of had the internet in a chokehold. But, yeah, with the print situation, the LOL Cats thing was like my very first, like my mom used to make like macro images of this rabbit called
Happy Bunny.
No, it was even, I think it was even before that. His name was Mozart the rabbit. My mom would just find these random pictures of this rabbit and like Photoshop. I remember one specifically where she made him look like an alien, and it was like top text, bottom text stuff. So then when I got my first laptop, my homepage, when people still had home pages when you turned your internet on, was iconhascheeseburger.com. So that's always been very present in my life and in the back of my mind, is just that format. Like, it's kind of hard to like look at a cat now and not associate it with like, I made you a sandwich, but I eated it. So with the print, I don't know, I thought it would be interesting to kind of do like obviously people put image macros on shirts, but like the handmade aspect of like kind of like hand putting a image macro onto like a shirt or a piece of paper, I thought was pretty interesting, especially because you can see where like the screens get a little messed up, so it's imperfect, and image macros were kind of designed to be like little perfect little
Yeah, the retro like demake of digital to like an analog format.
Yeah, that's kind of what I would love to do.
The echo, because the cat image that you use is like uncanny looking. The cat looks fucking miserable. And I think that's really interesting. It would be like if you sold somebody a ticket to a play, and then the curtain opens and actual literal Rick Astley is there, and then the orchestra starts playing like,
yeah,
Never Gonna Give You Up. It'd be like that. It's like you are taking it from the digital format to like a physical space.
I like kind of to peel away whatever first impression I have with these things and like applying a new meaning to it. Like, obviously it's supposed to be styled in the form of a joke. It's like self-depreciative. It's got the like rainbow flashy background and the bold impact text, but it's not really supposed to be a joke, you know? It's just a piece of art.
Yeah.
That's not quite perfect, but obviously made with some intention. I have another print that I did that I love to do. It took so much trial and error to figure out how I could print a scene from Gaia Online, the parking lot, because that's like I have very fond memories of like hanging out in the parking lot. Everybody's got a Scion or whatever.
And you've got that other print with the, it's like a repeated background pattern of like emoticons, and it's like glow in the dark.
Cow emojis.
Is there a link to your Instagram or
no? Whatever? I don't really have a shop. I just post to Instagram. I feel a little weird having a shop because I'm obviously using stuff that's not mine, so I don't really want the main focus to be to like sell it, but it is fun to make. If somebody wants something, I'll usually make it for them, but for the most part I just like to like kind of tap into stuff I used to like and make a shirt out of it, because like I can't get my hands on a Gaia Online shirt.
No. Well, I've got some screen printing experience. I've art degrees, so if you ever want any advice, I am happy to.
Oh, hell yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah, I literally just got into it last September, so this month is officially my like 1 year. I try to do one design a month just to like keep me on my toes.
Yeah, your registration's really clean.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I don't have a press or anything. I just eyeball everything.
Oof, that is hard to do, so good job.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I like to make things insanely complicated for myself just because I feel like it keeps my brain kind of pumping.
I totally sympathize with that. I will do something and then I get maybe 2 to 7% in, and then I'm like, surely there is a way to automate this process. And then I start looking into the way to automate it, and I'm like, I'm not smart enough to understand that. I'm gonna brute force it. And then I do.
Yeah, I did. My whole thing is I just want to make stuff for myself that I feel like doesn't already exist. So I've been wanting to make Sonic stuff because I'm a huge Sonic fan. But I don't, you know, I just want to put Sonic on a shirt. There's a million shirts with Sonic the Hedgehog on it. So I wanted to do Sonic Unleashed. There's basically nothing for Sonic Unleashed. That game got no promo. I did a design for Werehog that was like 8 screens. And that was the biggest pain in my ass I've ever done in my life.
That's so many screens.
They're all like 8.5 by 11 too. They're small screens.
Oh, they're itty bitty.
It's like that the Pikachu design that I did.
Yeah, that was definitely a very impressive first task to take on.
I think that's 7 screens. And to be fair, I TA'd for the graphics class for 3 years, and they did screen printing every semester. So I had to help like hundreds of students troubleshoot their own screen printing shit.
That's a huge plus.
That was a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, I kind of just dove straight in with no experience. I mean, I have a friend who's very, very talented that helped me out a lot. My girlfriend has an art degree as well, and she was a big help. She was the primary help. She taught me how to stretch screens and stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I love to just like tap into old random stuff. Like I've done creepypasta designs. I took a little bit of influence from Cotton Squab with the Gigas.
Yeah, I was gonna talk about that. The Gigas one, very impressive, and I like the glow in the dark one that you did for that.
Yeah, that's kind of the cool thing about doing everything yourself is I can take stuff that I'm very familiar with and do new stuff to it. Like turn Gigas into like glow in the dark, for example, I think is super cool.
And that's kind of like the essence of the internet, you know, is recontextualizing stuff and like pushing the boundaries on fair use and stuff like that. So I think that your use of the internet over time has influenced like your design chops to see the unseen in things, to find the white space in like a design and take advantage of that.
It's a lot of fun. It's definitely also a lot of fun to like just remember something from a long time ago and trying to like work it out into printable form. It's a process I really appreciate. That's pretty much, you know, where I'm at with like internet influence nowadays. It's really all thanks to like spending so much time online. Like literally, like I think I would describe myself as chronically online from the age of like 10 to 17. Obviously I stayed online after 17, but that's kind of when my life started to be like extrapolated with like real life experiences.
Imagine that. So your internet journey seems to have kind of brought you to a tour de force of your artistic ability, your references chops, your ability to see the other stuff in culture, pop culture. I think that really speaks to the strength of the internet, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So with that, go check out Backrooms on Instagram. There will be a link to that in the show notes. Thank you, Coda, again, for being on our show today.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. And with that, we will see you next time. Poochie, take us away.
We will see you next time on the Raffle Podcast.
Bye.
See you. Never let them know your next move.
Thank you again for listening to Raffle the Podcast, created by and starring Cotton Squab and Poochie. This week's episode featured the guest, Coda, also known as Gnome Boy. Check out his work on Instagram over at Backrooms, linked in the show notes. If you're curious about any of the things we talked about this episode, the links to those are in the show notes as well, mostly in chronological order. Logo created by Cotton Squab. Intro and outro music is Pookatorian Friends by Kevin McLeod. Thanks, as always, for listening.